Did you know that humans are getting shorter? What does bacon and eggs have to do with the CIA successfully overthrowing the government of Guatemala? Which country has a life expectancy of only 14 years old? Learn the stories behind these and so much more in my new book, Facts That Aren't True. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. Link in the description. Well, welcome back to another episode, everybody, and I have a big treat for you today. This is really awesome. I'm pleased to be joined by Professor Dave.
Howdy.
Thanks for being here. So
happy to be
we
here.
We are here to go over the debate, and you have it in quotes on your video, which is funny because that's how I addressed it when I emailed you, and I didn't even realize that you had addressed it in the exact same way. With a subur or subpar, as I've taken to call him.
Yeah, I get that a lot in the comments. I approve. That's a good nickname.
Yeah, it is a good one. Play on words is always legit. The one question I had was, how did this all come about? Was he like calling you out, or were you the one that was like, okay, this guy's saying so much nonsense, I'm gonna give him the James Tour special and all that?
You don't know the history of this, so it's pretty funny. Like a year ago, I did a reaction video. He and one of his idiot apologist friends did this pretty long video where it's, and I hadn't watched it. People send me stuff and to debunk. And sometimes I just do reaction videos because I think you do reaction videos too, right? It's like a little bit lower maintenance. Like it's not like a full edited video. It's less effort on my part. And for creationism or flat earth, I can do it because the things they say are so stupid, I can debunk them off the top of my head. I don't have to like look at primary literature or anything. So I did a very long, their video was almost 2 hours. So my reaction video was almost like 3.5 hours. And it's like late at night and I'm drinking whiskey and I'm just like making fun of them. And they got so mad that they were like, we have to debate. We're going to fly him out for a debate and all expenses paid and everything he wants. We're going to bring him to London. And then it was just this ridiculous back and forth of like him announcing finalized debates without ever having emailed me or contacted me in any way. And then they were like three over a week and a half in Birmingham so that I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to do that. And then he finally eventually pretended to have scheduled a debate, but totally didn't. Like he refused to put me in contact with anybody at that university. So I did some snooping and they're all like, yeah, we have no idea what you're talking about. Nobody scheduled any debate here. So he's like luring me somewhere. He rented a room somewhere or something. Anyway, I kept being like, debate me online, you coward, debate me online, you coward. So I think he got some pressure on his end. So he agreed to it. And what you saw is what you saw. You know? So, yeah,
that's funny. So he started it and you finished it.
He would say I started it from doing the reaction video, but he's the one who demanded this, demanded the debate, or, you know, in a blustery way. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to know the background on that. I probably watched that video over a year ago, but man, I watch like 20 videos a day. So it's hard to remember.
Nice. Yeah.
Hard to remember everything. So what we're going to go through, we're not going to go through the entire thing because so much of it is just nonsense and not privy to the topic or anything, but we for sure are going to go through most of his opening statement, and then there's some pretty funny back and forth parts. And you've had time to digest this and probably look into some of the stuff he said, which in real time it's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. It may just be nonsense. So we'll dive into everything and see what there is. So just interrupt me and tell me when to pause it if there's a particular thing that he says, but I'll be stopping it every now and then. We'll check it out.
Question before us tonight is Darwinian evolution a fact? So the first thing I need to do is define what I mean by Darwinian evolution. Now, I am defining Darwinian evolution as the modern synthesis or neo-Darwinism.
Well, this was just a fail right off the bat, as you brought up multiple times. The modern synthesis isn't really the same thing as Darwinian evolution.
Yeah, this was his whole tactic. So he has many, many debates online called Is Darwinian Evolution a Fact? And he actually does try to defend the idea that that basic Darwinian mechanisms are not factually true. And he did that so that I would just like watch those debates and prepare my rebuttals against the arguments he makes in those debates, and then just not talk about that at all. So that would be, he wanted to bluster about Dennis Noble because he just wrote a little pamphlet about Dennis Noble and was like, you know, if I had looked at that stuff for even an hour, I would have had more to say about it, but it just didn't seem relevant because we were talking about Darwinian evolution. That's the title that he chose. So I had all my rebuttals to the crap he said in those other debates, you know, so.
That's quite a 4D chess move. Put out hours of content to distract your opponent for a future debate.
I mean, I'll hand it to him. It's probably the cleverest thing he could have done. I mean, it's like, he has very limited number of moves to play. You know what I mean? Like, he can't talk about science. He doesn't know how to do that. No. So how is he going to, you know, worm his way out of the debate by not debating the topic he chose? So.
Yeah, I got some points to that, but I'll let him talk a little bit further.
Okay.
Reason for this is because it's the foundation currently of evolutionary theory. And there are objections to the neo-Darwinian modern synthesis by the likes of James Shapiro, Dennis Noble, and others. Now, this is the big question that's being debated between two great giants of evolutionary theory. In the camp of neo-Darwinism, you have Richard Dawkins, and in the camp of anti-neo-Darwinism, you actually have Dennis Noble. Now, this interesting debate took place about 2 years ago. Both of them went head to head. And what you see in this debate is they are essentially arguing on a very simple point about causality, but then that lifts into other areas. And primarily, they're focusing on Dennis Noble's book, Dance to the Tune of Life, which is published by Cambridge University. So I'm going to be using the arguments of Dennis Noble from this book, which have been battle tested against the likes of Dawkins.
So before we, I want to pause here to ask you, you know, do you think you'd be able to steel man what Dennis Noble's position is? Because from what I've heard from Subpar, he really doesn't even understand what Noble is saying to the extent that I've looked into him.
No, he has no idea. He's just going, look what Dennis Noble says. Published by Cambridge University. It's not Cambridge University Press. It's not Cambridge. It's just a lot of look at what my dad says. Mm-hmm. My dad can beat up your dad. So this is the thing about Dennis Noble. So he's not an evolutionary biologist. He's a physiologist. He's been paid by the Templeton Foundation to enter this space and create rhetoric to try to boost creationist claims. Nobody in evolutionary biology takes him seriously. Tabor acts like this one conversation between Noble and Dawkins is like the event of the century in biology. Nobody cares about this. So the whole point of it is to try to like revive some kind of idea of Lamarckism. This like inherited characteristics can be bequeathed to the progeny, which is some, you know, an invalidation of Darwinian principles, right? Of the central dogma of molecular biology. But it all rests on a distortion of all these terms and just, you know, I'm actually going to do a very lengthy piece on Noble. I'll mention that creationists cite him like Sabor, and actually Discovery Institute goes crazy for Noble, obviously. But it'll just be about Noble and just, it'll be a more in-depth piece on all these claims.
Yeah. And we're going to see, I don't know exactly how much this we'll see, but we'll see claims like, oh, does physiology guide evolution in some sort of way? Like all these rhetorical tricks that Sabor is trying to do. I mean, as if evolutionary biologists don't currently get together at conferences and say, we want to modify the modern synthesis to include niche partitioning and all kinds of other things. As if any of that debunks Darwinian evolution, which it just doesn't.
Right. No. And in fact, I kept showing that Venn diagram to number one, rigidly define the terms that he is misusing, but also to show that Darwinian processes, they're at the center there, right? They're the limited thing and they're part of the bigger thing. So yeah, obviously we evolved way beyond thinking that it's simply descent with modification and natural selection. There are these many other mechanisms at play. So first we start to understand genetic drift and these other things from, from studying populations, population dynamics. So these are distinct mechanisms that are not natural selection. They're different mechanisms. And then once we started to know, what DNA is, right? All of that stuff happened before we even knew what DNA is. So now that we understand the genome, and yeah, epigenetics is very interesting, right? And it is, and it's, somebody would be right to point out, oh, wow, isn't this interesting that changes to, in terms of epigenetics, changes to whether genes are available for transcription or not, right? Histone modification and stuff, that there's an element of that that can be passed on by, for a generation or two, not permanently, of course, but that it can at all is interesting. This is a fascinating thing. But biologists know about that. It's not like they don't know about that, right? Epigenetics is part of the modern synthesis. So it's a whole lot of bluster over nothing, unfortunately, which is really all you can say about any creationist.
Yeah, what a term I like to use a lot of times in science is sometimes we have what I call low resolution answers. It's like for origin of life stuff, we don't know precisely how it happened, but we have actually a very good low resolution answer, which is chemistry, because the answer is going to come somewhere from in there. Magic is not an appropriate alternate explanation.
Right.
And I would say Darwin had kind of a low resolution explanation for the diversity of life, although it was sophisticated and very good, which is just that populations change over time as driven by variation and selection. And nothing that Sabor brings up disproves that. It just adds resolution to what we already thought and what we already knew.
Yeah, it undeniably does not violate any Darwinian principles, which is why he has to keep, misrepresenting the definitions of the terms, because otherwise he has to admit that he chose the wrong title for the debate on purpose. But furthermore, it doesn't really contradict neo-Darwinism or modern synthesis or whatever he wants to call it anyway, right? Modern evolutionary biologists are studying and understand these processes and incorporate them into evolutionary biology. So Lamarckism is not true. Sorry.
No, absolutely. All right, what's he got next?
Now, there's four pillars of neo-Darwinism, according to Dennis Noble, and all four of these pillars, according to him, have fallen. The first one is the central dogma, which is DNA to RNA to proteins. There's only one way causation of information.
So has that pillar of Darwinian evolution been dismantled, Dave?
No, so this is a misrepresentation. So all this is people will bring up like reverse transcription and stuff like that, right? The central dogma, it doesn't say that no information can ever, right? It's just talking about transcription and translation. Once you transcribe a gene to get the mRNA and then you translate the mRNA to get the protein, that information can never be reversed because of the redundancy of the code, right? Several different codons can code for the same amino acid residue. So you can't take one amino acid residue from the protein and figure out which codon it came from and therefore what the gene was. You can't do it. So that, and this, I really regret that Crick use the word dogma. It's not a dogma.
Yeah.
Like, he just didn't know what dogma means. Like, it's just, sometimes it happens with physics a lot, right? Physicists use the terminology like dark matter and dark energy. And I'm like, I wish that you guys didn't call it that. Like, just it opens up all this confusion from the public. But yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah. And we're stuck with Big Bang, which a person that didn't even believe it coined.
Right.
And so we're stuck using a skeptical term, but that I actually kind of like, but I guess what can you do? But even if we, because the central dogma, that isn't, you don't falsify Darwinian evolution based on it. We know that like the mammalian placenta came about from a retrovirus insertion, which kind of violates the central dogma. But that says nothing again about the low resolution explanation I gave earlier of variation in populations coupled with selection causes populations to change.
Yeah.
It doesn't So even if the pillar's been brought down, it doesn't disprove.
Right.
And again, all he's doing is saying neo-Darwinism, according to him,
right,
according to his interpretation of what.
Yeah. There are no pillars, right? This isn't a religion.
No.
Nobody calls it that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, reverse transcription doesn't change what transcription and translation is, right? We know how transcription and translation work. Other processes also happen. That's true, but that's it.
Now, according to him, that's not true. Although the dogma holds in that direction, it is not the only way that information is conveyed. The second pillar is the Weismann barrier. This is the idea that the genome is isolated from the soma cells. The third is the passive vehicle, that the organism is a passive vehicle to retain genes which are active causally in the process of evolution. The last pillar is the pillar of randomness. So what Dennis Noble is challenging is the idea that randomness can actually generate function. He doesn't deny randomness. This is a common straw man that's made against him. However, what he's challenging is the idea that randomness in of itself can generate biological functionality.
You know, I rewatched this debate today, and we'll go over the Weismann barrier and the passive vehicle stuff during the back and forth that you guys have, because it gets brought up there. But the randomness thing, am I misremembering, or did that just really not get brought up at all?
Oh, probably not. Well, he keeps saying, but Darwinian evolution is random mutation and natural. Like, he doesn't like, he fixates on this word random over and over again. It's like, look, mutations happen. There are many, many mutations which are completely random. Right. He's trying to categorize what can happen as a result of mutation based on whether they're random or not, which makes absolutely no sense. Right. There are mutagens, endogenous or exogenous mutagens, that alter the genome, potentially in a germline cell. And a point mutation even can dramatically alter a phenotype. Could be random, could be whatever it is, right? So the thing is that he doesn't know what mutation is. Like, he doesn't know how transcription and translation work. Remember, like, my favorite moment of the whole debate was when he said gene expression is epigenetics. It's like,
yeah.
Oh my God, way to admit that you have no idea what either of those terms mean. Like, gene expression is transcription and translation, what we all learn in ninth grade, like, that he doesn't know what that is. But it's like, he doesn't know, like, he doesn't know that process, right? So he doesn't understand that, like, a point mutation can cause a significant change in a protein that can alter a phenotype and make an organism totally different. And he doesn't understand how mutations occur either, because he doesn't understand any chemistry. So, right, you're talking about a mutagen, you know, a high energy particle strikes a particular base in DNA, and then that codes for the wrong base on the other side during replication. Now you've cemented the mutation. That could potentially be a missense mutation that codes for a different amino acid in the resulting protein. So you can get totally different thing. Random process, totally random process. Then natural selection works on that, you know, and if it confers a survival advantage, then that's selected for, right? Often it's not, but sometimes it is.
Yeah, random, it's just used as a boogeyman word by evolution deniers and creationists, which Sabur isn't even really an evolution denier, not exactly, but kind of in some weird ways, I guess. He thinks it doesn't apply to us. The way they use the word random as a boogeyman, random mutations can't create new novel organs or organisms. Like, you're just forgetting that natural selection is part of the theory. And so it's just completely dishonest.
Yeah. I mean, more importantly, they just don't know what mutation is, and they don't know what they don't know what mutations can do to a genome and therefore to a phenotype. They just have no idea what is happening. Basically,
it's a multi-leveled problem. Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely. And then, so we're not going to give this any time, because it doesn't deserve any, but this goes on for 7 minutes and 20 seconds. Just this.
Yeah,
a really idiotic, pedantic attack. 1920s, more like the 1910s, Dave.
Oh my God.
1990s, more.
This
more
idiot like... thinks that this is like a so-called philosopher of biology thinks that understanding biology is memorizing dates. Yeah. And yet he doesn't know what gene expression is at a ninth grade level. It's the funniest thing in the world.
And then instead of really discussing scientifically what any of Dennis Noble's ideas are, he just laid out, like, this was like a resume. He just talked about where he worked before and some stuff that he had published instead of getting into. And I was watching this live, and there's this sort of meme in my channel that we use all the time, because whenever I'm talking to somebody that really is clueless, like a flat earther, during a live stream, I'll break the fourth wall and I'll say, chat, what is it doing? And I was spamming that during the discussion and saying, like, support, he's not talking about evolutionary biology. He just flat out didn't for almost the entire debate. At almost no point did he actually discuss biology or evolution really in any way.
No, he just says, my dad can beat up your dad, right? My dad is Dennis Noble and your dad is Richard Dawkins and my dad can beat up your dad. Well, my dad's not Richard Dawkins, right? Richard Dawkins wasn't even like some kind of revolutionary biologist, right? He was a working biologist and an excellent science communicator that wrote really good books that elucidated aspects of biology for public consumption. But it's like flat earthers who treat Neil deGrasse Tyson as the president of science, right? He's not Stephen Hawking. Like he's a science communicator. He explains science to the public, but yeah, he can't. I mean, if he doesn't know what gene expression is, he definitely doesn't understand epigenetics and all these other processes. So for the most part, he kept going like Aristotle and like that kind of crap. Once or twice, he memorized a little blurb about like somatic hypermutation or something like that. But it's like, there's nothing to do with this. Like that doesn't contradict anything Darwinian whatsoever. Genetic assimilation is a Darwinian process, right? It's none of that, these things contradict. Yeah,
we're gonna go over that part later because that was the best part of the debate, I thought, the genetic assimilation thing. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why I thought it was so funny when we get there. But all right, skipping ahead,
rather than point mutations selected over time that led to all of the biological functionality that we actually have. Now, the example he gives is...
Yeah, we should talk about that, actually. So,
sure, what he just said.
Yeah, so he said point mutations. First of all, he doesn't know what point mutations are. But the problem here, so all creationists do this, right? They pretend, oh, point mutations, not going to... Yeah, there are many, many... There's macro mutations, right? Macro mutations can lead to a lot of... You can have a gene duplication and neofunctionalization. You can have entire chromosome duplication and then a divergence where you get tons and tons of brand new genes. So just harping on point mutation is just textbook creationist dishonesty. Doesn't mean anything.
The Lego blocks there. What he basically says is, imagine a child who simply has Lego blocks, these small little blocks, and you ask them to build a bridge, build a house, build a car, whatever it is. You give another child bricks, but you also give them beams, you give them flooring, you give them walls, you give them tunnels, you give them arches, you give them lots of prefabricated tools. Which kid will build faster? And according to Dennis Noble, it's going to be the second child because of genome reorganization. Hence why he doesn't believe in randomness. Now, let me clarify. He doesn't say randomness doesn't exist. He doesn't believe randomness can generate biological functionality. He thinks other things are at play.
I must have my timestamp slightly wrong because I wrote down something he says there, but it must have happened just before that. But Sabur says that I don't think this is his belief, but he's misrepresenting what was in that paper from Nature that he was showing, because he says genome reorganization led to all the biological functionality that we have. He's claiming that that paper said something like that. Mm-hmm. And he cites McClintock, who discovered, you know, jumping genes. And I think he's trying to do word salad because the unread people that watch his stuff will be like, oh, he said a big word, so that must mean something. Oh, so it's not the random mutations that are actually responsible for it. Well, I don't understand what any of these words mean, but I'm gonna believe this guy. I would assume that was the tactic there.
Of course. No, he can't read papers. So it's misrepresenting papers plus, oh, here's an analogy about kids playing with blocks that you can relate to. Right. So I know what I'm talking about. Like, what the hell was that analogy? It's totally meaningless.
I don't know. I mean, a simple idea for a simple mind, perhaps. That's that's something that I go back to.
Another pillar is the passive vehicle. Now, this is the idea that the organism is passive and the genes are active. The genes are the real drivers of causality here. Now, during the discussion, Richard Dawkins and Dennis Noble started to go back and forth on this particular view. Now, Dawkins basically said to Noble, I could take your genome and I could take all of the 3 billion base pairs and I could engrave them in granite. After 10,000 years, I could put them in a sequencing machine and I can make a replica of you, Dennis Noble. And Noble said, no, you can't. He said, you need the egg cell. So Noble is challenging this idea that...
So this is completely false. And I don't know if Noble even said this because it would be weirdly stupid. But Sabor's making the point that, no, you couldn't make a clone of me if you just took DNA from one of my somatic cells, because you would need my mother's egg because of the epigenetic imprinting that occurred during my mother's lifetime. No, if I'm taking it from you as an adult, the epigenetic effects that happened to your mother are already present.
Yeah. It's in the genome.
Yeah, it's already there.
I don't know what Dawkins said or not. The only thing you could push back on is that it would be a clone, right? It's like you would have exactly what was in the zygote, right? From the point of the formation of the zygote, then there can be, right? There are environmental influences to the development of an organism, right? So it wouldn't be exactly like 90 whatever year old Dennis Noble after that many years, but it would be the same genome. So everything would be identical there.
Yeah. It's just, it's a complete non-starter. And then, oh man, there's some great word salad that happens here with the cell membrane.
It's going to self-replicate without that, because the epigenetic markings from the experiences that that his mother actually went through.
There's the part of him talking about the epigenetic markers, but this is the best. No, I doubt it.
The thing that he points out is that the conditional logic of life is not found in the genome. The if, then, or else something else, that conditional logic is found in the cell membrane, and those cell membranes are not coded for in the genome.
Yes, they are. First of all, I brought this up in the debate, right? Oh, where the hell do those lipids come from? Enzymes? Who biosynthesize them, which are encoded in the genome, right? Where does he think these lipids come from?
Yeah, you did bring it up, but then that was the last time it ever got brought up. Course, he didn't right. try to defend it. But I don't know if you've had time to think about this. What on earth does it mean the conditional logic of life is in the cell membrane?
Yeah, that's philosophy bro gibberish. That doesn't mean anything.
I mean, I talk to a lot of philosophy bros, and I have to like think about what they're saying, but I can usually figure it out. But I cannot figure out what the conditional logic of life is in the cell membrane.
Encoded in what? Cholesterol in receptors? What? What are you talking about? Name three components of the cell membrane, Sabor. See if you can do it. Bet you can't.
Three. That's he can't do three. That's
definitely
for sure.
Not three.
He goes on to talk about this proofreading thing. And this is another like AIG talking point and Institute of Creation Research and all this kind of stuff. It's not, again, they use the randomness as the boogeyman word. And then they point out that no, without the proofreading, it couldn't possibly work. And proofreading can't spontaneously evolve or anything like that. But it all just comes back to what we were discussing earlier, which is, the stuff we found out about RNA polymerase and gene editing within the cell that goes on, all that's fantastic. And none of it falsifies the concept of Darwinian evolution. None of it. It just makes our understanding of it more rigorous.
Yeah. Like, is the argument that there can't have been any life prior to the evolution of these enzymes? Like, I don't get it.
I don't think Sabor gets it either.
It's an interesting thing to point out that obviously like DNA repair enzymes and all of these things had evolved to maintain a higher degree of fidelity of the genome. But that doesn't mean that more errors during replication doesn't also have some utility, right? Earlier on, and even probably in some extant life, right? There's extant life that has lower degrees of fidelity for the genome. That just enhances the amount of genetic variance, right? And that can be a good thing. If you have more genetic variance, I think it's probably true of bacteria. I don't know. I would have to check that. But I think a lot of bacterial species, there's lower fidelity for DNA replication. But it just means more genetic variance. That's all it is.
Yeah, which can be... There are good cases and arguments for being conservative with the genome, like stabilizing selection. If it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing. But, you know, there's like that fern that famously has 23,000 chromosomes or something like that. So there's obviously a lot of gene duplication going on there. Yeah. The Tuatara, I think, famously has like the fastest mutating genome of any animal that we know of. But in other species, it's like for humans, the two most different genetically humans are still more similar than than any two random chimps are. They have vastly more genetic variants than we do. So they both happen, and it's not a problem.
Different strategies. You know, nature is clever. Nature is very interesting.
I always forget who this quote is from. Maybe you've heard it before, but there's a biologist who this quote is attributed to him, and it just goes, natural selection is more clever than you are. Mm-hmm. And that's something to keep in mind, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to skip to some of the spicy stuff. Opening statements are great, but you know, nobody's really there to hold your feet to the fire in real time. So the open discussion type stuff is more spicy. It's a little more enjoyable. So right around here, Sabor says something about natural selection with a mind and body. So we'll take a listen to him for a little bit.
This is something that was known way before any of these discussions took place. So what we are really speaking about is, does natural selection plus random mutations, can it create mind and body as the selfish gene purports it can? That is what we need to discuss. Not does Darwinian evolution take place, natural selection with random mutations. Everybody agrees with that. Dennis Noble agrees with that. I've agreed with that. If you actually saw my talks, you would hear me saying that exact thing.
I don't know why anybody would subject themselves to listening to that. But this whole thing about, I mean, it really never gets resolved. But I'm curious as to your take on why is it such a problem to imagine that natural selection can create minds and bodies?
Yeah, this is what I said over and over again. And he just kept deflecting. An organism develops, the whole organism. And a brain, which is, you call mind, like, what are you even saying? Like, I think he just harps on mind because it elicits like the thought of like human consciousness, and creationists think that human consciousness evades any naturalistic explanation. So it just like gets people in that like kind of mystical state or something. But what he's saying means nothing. I mean, it truly doesn't mean anything. And it's not, it's just a complete misquote of Dawkins anyway, right? It doesn't, like, it's not like, it's just like gene expression. You have a zygote, genes are expressed, and you get an organism. That's it. It's nothing else.
Yeah. And if Sabor, to my knowledge, he doesn't deny, like, he denies human evolution or aspects of human evolution, but he doesn't deny that, like, for example, Australopithecus and Homo erectus existed, does he?
No, I mean, I think that, well, I mean, he can't deny that those specimens exist, but he definitely denies the entire field of biological anthropology, right? For him, it's human chimp common ancestry that offends his faith. But what's wild is that, like, I've heard him say that, like, oh, maybe whales evolved from land mammals. And that's fine, because that doesn't like insult my faith or anything. Oh, why would it? It's not in your scripture that, like, no, whales always lived in the sea, right? But what's bananas is that, like, he can handle that level of phenotypic change from a land mammal to a whale, but something so similar to us as whatever our common ancestor was, whether it was like, you know, Sahelanthropus tinensis or whatever organism it was, where that branch was between us and chimps, so similar to us, and he can't handle that, right? Because that does fly in the face of his faith. So it's weird.
What's so contradictory and just silly about it is, you know, I would like to ask him, are humans organisms made of ordinary matter? Like, we're awesome, interesting, intricate, complex things, but we're just literally made of chemicals and molecules and all that.
Well, so if, I'm sure he believes in souls, so I bet he,
well, there's that too. But he didn't invoke that. So if a human is an organism, otherwise, and organisms have brains and can think, then obviously a naturalistic process produces living things that think, that have minds. So unless he denies that any other animal has a mind or can think or whatever, which some people do that, then it's just a total contradiction, I think. If it can do it for them and you're fine with that, then there's no leap of faith you have to take for human beings at all.
Well, I think he would categorize us as, there's something about human consciousness that's special to him, right? More so than, you know, like, it to him, it doesn't matter if a dolphin is intelligent or not, or, you know, or sentient, right? It has nothing to do with his faith. He couldn't care less about dolphins, right? It's just us. But it just doesn't matter, right? This mind and body, it just doesn't mean anything. Like, it's just nothing to talk about here, you know?
No, yeah, it's so silly. And not to repeat myself too much, but again, the idea, if he agrees that natural selection does happen, if he agrees that mutations happen and change organisms, and humans have physical brains and organs, then there's no contradiction in any of this. It doesn't make sense to believe it unless it's inconvenient for your faith, again, which, you know, with creationists, they like to think they're at least smarter than flat earthers because they accept all those other sciences, but they somehow only reject the sciences that interfere with their precious superstitions.
Yes.
I was like, is this objective? What we're doing? Yeah, it's very scientific.
But it's just a script. I mean, like, he can't stray from the script. So it's just this mind body thing. I ask him repeatedly to clarify what the hell he's talking about. He dodges it. He goes, James understands what I'm saying. James. And he's like, bro.
Yeah, crying to the something. Moderator.
Like, what are you doing? Like, talk if you want to say something. It's a farce.
And then he pulled the, is natural selection the necessary and sufficient condition for whatever for humans with minds and thoughts? My cat has decided to join us here. Just classic, just try to throw confusion into the whole mix.
Yeah, it's just rhetoric.
All right. So this moment, the thing about assimilation, this was absolutely hilarious. So let's play a part of this.
Okay, so let me do this first, right? And James, you can stop me if you think I'm going the wrong way. I'm happy to explain genetic assimilation and Conrad Waddington's work, but I don't want to give Farina free education, and I'm going to make a claim. He has no idea what Conrad Waddington was up to and why Dennis Noble uses his work. Why don't you explain to me first what this is, and if you fail to do so, then I'll do it.
No. I want to tell you why I found this so funny. So this is a conversation I had with somebody last year. And I'm not going to play the first 5.5 minutes, but the first 5.5 minutes of the entire discussion is me asking the person, can you give me any evidence of intelligent design? And after dodging for 5 minutes, this is what he says. So what I said was, give me evidence of intelligent design in life.
Can you give me examples of intelligent?
So instead of him doing it, he wants me to do it. I don't believe in intelligent design,
right?
But he was so bad at it that he couldn't think of one. And he does it later on too. He says, you give me the evidence. I'm like, buddy, well, I don't believe in this.
Well, that he's just evading that guy, right? Cause he has nothing to say. Sabor was trying to do gotcha moments to make little short videos. Mm-hmm. That's all he was doing.
Yeah, he did that. Maybe it's this part where he says, oh, that's going to make a great clip or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe
that at some point where he's just like, he's just flat out admitting all he's there to do is like mine the content for out of context shorts. It's ridiculous.
And then the hilarious thing is he said his like exact words were, if Dave can't do it, then I will be happy to tell the entire audience about genetic assimilation. And we're going to talk about genetic assimilation, you and I here in a second, but this is what he says not even 2 minutes later.
So what are you looking for?
I asked you about genetic assimilation.
Okay, so tell me assimilation. Tell me a thing that you are dying to tell me.
I'm not going to educate you till I prove to the
Well, parents. I just educate.
So he said he's not going to do it. Even after you said, Sabor, pretend you win. Now tell us about it. No, I'm not going to do that.
Also, he's not acknowledging that he said explain this to a slide that said transgenerational epigenetic inheritance, which is not related to genetic assimilation. I explained that at great length. And then he's like, man, that's not what I wanted. I'm just like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was incompetence on his part. And you explained that and you explained it fine. And assimilation has to do with, well, he thinks it has to do with epigenetics, but it really doesn't. And then he pretended that you committed the foul there when really it was a balk on his point or on his part rather. This is a Sabor kind of tries to talk about assimilation, but he gets it absolutely wrong here.
The book is published this
one at a time. One at a time. Stuff.
Okay. So genetic assimilation means when epigenetic marking is transferred to the germline after 14 generations, in the case of the fruit flies with Conrad Waddington's book.
So that's just literally entirely wrong. Did you look into the genetic assimilation thing after this? Because I had never heard of that term when he was bringing it up in real time. But
I didn't look up anything that he's saying about the fruit flies in the germline. I imagine that that's just completely fabricated. But no, I think he's trying to pretend that, like, if we're talking about like a phenotype becoming heritable, right, that somehow isn't already in the genome, right? But it is.
The genetic assimilation, from what I've read, all it means is there's some sort of trait, and it's maybe expressed as a phenotype. Those are the most obvious, but some traits are invisible, like your blood type. Mm-hmm. All it means is, at first, that allele or that gene or that trait or whatever is under natural selection because it's advantageous for whatever reason. But eventually it becomes fixed in the population. So everybody in the population has it. At that point, then it can become assimilated, meaning even when, like if the environment changes and that particular trait is no longer selected for, well, because every organism has it, it's fixed into the population. That's all that biological assimilation means. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything to do with epigenetics. Epigenetics can maybe be influential in the way it occurs, but
right.
I mean, an epigenetic
marker could be inherited, but that's not, that doesn't have to do with this.
Yeah. But he said that's what biological assimilation is, which is just, again, like so many things, is completely wrong. And
does not violate neither Darwinian evolution nor neo-Darwinian evolution nor any other variety of evolution that you're pretending to be talking about. Yeah, but this is what happens when you just like daddy Dennis and don't actually learn anything, you know?
No, yeah. And exactly like you said, it keeps coming back to you pressed him on this. How is this a problem for Darwinian evolution? And all he said was, haha, you don't know what the word means.
Change the subject. Change the subject. Yeah.
So
running away. Yeah.
So we're going to focus on science now. Now, as Aristotle said,
that was like my favorite. Oh my God, dude. Like not even like a contemporary, philosopher of biology, fucking Aristotle. Like, dude, get out of here, man. So ridiculous.
That was a great moment. I got to hand it to Sabor. At least he's funny. It's unironically funny, but at least he's funny.
Is in biology, or are you pretending that you're contradicting some kind of fundamental paradigm?
Let me explain again. Maybe James can help us out here. We're speaking about neo-Darwinism, genes creating us mind and body. That idea, I am challenging. Do you understand that?
So again, that wasn't we kind of already touched on this, I guess, but that wasn't the topic of the debate. You guys were not there to discuss, can evolution create a human mind and body? But it's all he wanted to talk about. We already talked about how it's not a problem for natural selection, I don't think, or Darwinian or even neo-Darwinian evolution or anything like that. But any additional thoughts on that?
No, it's just his catchphrase again. I mean, it's not the topic of the debate, and it is also meaningless. Creating mind and body. Like we can see organisms develop. What do you want to talk about in an evolutionary context that is associated with organismal development? It doesn't mean anything.
Well, he tries to do that because now we get into the somatic hyperfixation. I think that happens around this point here. So.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, hyper. I said hyperfixation, didn't I?
The point is this. In B cells in the immune system, when there is an antigen, the genome is actually mutated, hypermutated in certain parts. And those are the parts that actually code for antibodies. And those DNA sequences are then selected by the organism to fight off antigens. So according to Dennis Noble, somatic hypermutation changes the genome.
So this is cool stuff. It's fascinating. I'm sure you knew about this. This is like what happens in your thymus, I'm pretty sure, with the programming of the B cells. Mm-hmm. You've probably made multiple videos about it because you have
somewhere in my immunology content, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you have tons of stuff on this, but
it's just, he's referencing mutation and selection and pretending that that somehow invalidates evolutionary processes, mutation and selection.
Yeah. But none of this goes into the germline. It's a somatic process that I'm sure helps the organism survive. And so, yeah, having an immune system that creates all these gazillions of different possible antigens for things you may never come across is evolutionarily advantageous, but it doesn't directly go into the germline. So it's not exactly inherited, but the organism's capacity to carry that out is just going to be inherited in the DNA they get from mom and dad anyway. It doesn't pose any kind of a problem.
Yeah. He's saying, look at this cool thing evolution did. Doesn't that disprove evolution?
Yeah, Darwin didn't know about this. Therefore, Darwinian evolution
is wrong.
Is false.
Yeah, he didn't know what DNA is in general, dude.
No, yeah, it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. You know, there was some... I took a brief look at some of the back and forth that Noble and Dawkins had about this. And did you ever read The Selfish Gene?
No, I don't think I've ever read any of Dawkins' books. I just kind of know generally what they're about. I'm sure I've read excerpts. But...
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean, he's highly quoted and all of that. Mm-hmm. But The Selfish Gene, it was kind of monumental, and it just made people think in different ways. So I think the easiest way I can couch it is, have you ever heard the phrase, a chicken is just an egg's way of making another egg?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get it.
So I'm not sure if that comes from him or not. It very well may, but we can actually look at that from a different level of analysis. An egg is just an X chromosome's way of making another X chromosome, for example. And the analogy holds true at both those levels of analysis. So Dawkins, The Selfish Gene, just kind of famously says, look, if you want to understand why organisms are the way they are, see if you can figure out why there would be a selfishly acting gene that would cause those kinds of changes in the organism to statistically increase its chances of proliferating into the environment, which is the same concept of survival of the fittest, looking at it at the level of the organism, but just kind of reducing it down to the gene sort centric. To a gene-centric view, but like sort of the fundamental unit of the organism, which is the gene. And again, that's a simplistic reading, but genes are, nobody thinks that they aren't monumentally influential and important.
Yeah, that's not to ascribe them sentience, but obviously, like, our understanding genetics in a fundamental way post 1950s, 1960s, right? Once we understood the mechanisms of molecular biology, obviously our understanding of evolution was transformed incredibly. That's why we find all these new, you know, mechanisms. And that's why the evolutionary paradigm must expand, because we're learning about what DNA actually does and how that informs, you know, evolution and evolutionary processes. But Spore definitely doesn't know anything about it.
No. And then getting back to Noble, from what I was able to tell, you know, I gave you Dawkins perspective on it. Noble seems to really just be saying, well, I think that because of things like epigenetics and whatever else, they're part of the inheritance structure. So you can't say it's just genes. And he just kind of wants a paradigm shift to happen, a sort of rewrite. But again, as if evolutionary biologists don't already feel this way, because we know about things, I already mentioned this, like niche partitioning and habitat construction or whatever, that already exists that isn't part of the current model.
Yeah.
So,
organisms modify their environment, which in turn modifies the genome. It's like, okay, fine. That's a really interesting quirk of the biological world that doesn't rewrite all of evolution, right? It's not that Noble doesn't reference legitimate natural phenomena. It's that he inflates their relevance, uses deceptive rhetoric on purpose, because he's paid to do so, to create this notion that there's this incredible paradigm shift challenging Darwinism, because that is the alleged prophet of the naturalists, right? It's all very coded language, right? There's a reason for all of this. It's funded by very specific people that want exactly this kind of conversation going on to lend credence to creationist viewpoints, intelligent design proponents, etc. That's why they champion him. And nobody in the evolutionary biology community gives two shits about Noble or talks about him at all. That's it.
No. What you said reminded me of something. I don't know if you've had this same kind of reflection, but people like Sabour or like the creationists that you've debunked or that I debate and talk to, they think very dogmatically and they worship a God. And it's as if they, even though they know we don't like believe in God and we accept the science, they still, it's like their brains can't think in any other way. Wait, I'm dogmatic and I worship something, which means if they disagree with me, it still means that they're dogmatic and worship something. So, aha, you worship Neil deGrasse Tyson and Richard Dawkins and
it's endless projection. I have a prophet and scripture, so you also have a prophet and scripture, because that's the only way to level the playing field, right? I choose my prophet and scripture over your prophet and scripture. They can't handle the imbalance of, you know, the idea that they have dogma and we have empirical science. They can't handle that reality. So
the prophecies of science have come true and continue to come true every single day, because that's the nature of scientific research. So we can even agree with them and it's not the W that they think it is.
Yeah.
The last thing that I wanted to, and this is actually the only part I haven't seen, is Sabour's closing statement. I'm really interested in his take in how the whole thing went. So I'll be blind reacting to this part here. So let's see how bad it is.
So firstly, this debate is about neo-Darwinism. This debate is about the modern synthesis. What we saw here is that Farina was claiming it came together, neo-Darwinism came together in the 1920s. It didn't. Modern synthesis came 70 years later, 1990s. It didn't. You cannot use these terms interchangeably.
The debate was not on neo-Darwinism. And you getting dates not
20 years off. Wow. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Means
this is his closing statement. This is his summary. Lying about the debate topic he chose and whining about a date I got a little bit wrong. That's how he's closing this thing.
let's see what else he's got.
Yep.
You can. He called Dennis Noble a complete clown. He could not actually understand the four pillars, which Dennis Noble actually challenged. He could not stay with the discussion when it came to causality, the four distinctions of Aristotle, and he couldn't actually.
I didn't go over any of the things from Aristotle, but do you have any? Was there anything from that you reflected on? And
no.
Had anything interesting to say.
Aristotle said causality, like, dude, come on. It's just such a very clear cover for he doesn't know what gene expression is. He can't explain transcription and translation at a ninth grade level. So he has to bluster about Aristotle instead to make himself seem intelligent. He can't talk about science at all.
If Dave doesn't know these esoteric philosophical terms, that proves that Dave loses this debate that we're having.
I also just refuse to take the bait, right? I'm not going to talk to him about Aristotle. We're here to talk about evolutionary biology. So I refuse.
Wise move. It's hard not to take the bait, but wise move.
Actually even understand the distinction between the blind watchmaker and the one-eyed watchmaker, and why it is that Dennis Noble's perspective directly challenges the blind watchmaker. So tonight he has been neutered, domesticated, deselected, shown to be a coward, and shown to be incoherent. And what I'm looking forward to actually is to debate him again on universal common ancestry, and let's see how he does. And I bet he won't accept the challenge and he'll run away like I had to stand on my own in Brunel and give a talk. I'll have to chase this coward down for another day.
Yeah, he didn't talk about science or evolution or biology at all in his closing statement. Do you have any interest in talking to him about common ancestry?
Well, no, because he doesn't care what the debate topic is. He just talks about whatever he wants to talk about. So he'll call it something else and then just whine about Dennis Noble for 90 minutes again. Like, there's no point in doing it. Also, I have a video coming out soon about it where I show footage from this talk at Brunel, right? It was supposed to be the debate. He's talking to nobody. He's in an empty room. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. He pretends it's a talk and he's like, hey, everybody. It's delivered to silence. Even when he finishes, not a stitch of applause. I look forward to your questions. I think the cameraman asks a question or something to make it seem like somebody's the
cameraman.
There. Oh, it's like, wild. Dude, this is, if you needed any more proof that he never set up a debate and he just rented a room. So yeah, no, we're the Sabor saga is over on my end in terms of actual interaction. But I'm sure he'll keep whining about me for the rest of his life.
Yeah, it's really annoying because he'll go around saying Dave is ducking me or dodging me or whatever. And you know, no, it's not worth my time. But in a way, they almost get away with all the bullshit they're saying.
Yeah. Well, that's why I did one online debate, right? It doesn't hurt anything. I'm in my house, right? I didn't have to fly to London, right, for some bullshit like this. For, you know, without pay or anything like that. I can just do it from my house. That's totally fine. I'm happy to humiliate him, get some content, get a little paycheck off of live streaming the debate. Totally fine to do that. But, you know, enough is enough. So
did you notice the people like walking around in the background wherever he was?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's his little entourage or something. I don't know. Who cares?
I found that to be a little unprofessional and a little off-putting. I was like, you couldn't just like go somewhere and just like
he's in like just you. If this is where his posse hangs out, like it's like a library study room or something. I don't know where he was. That's where he, you know, goes to pretend to be intellectual, I think.
No, yeah, me neither. Well, that's pretty much everything that I wanted to take a look at. Again, like, thank you so much. This is really cool for me having you on here. Are there any projects or like big things that are coming down the pipeline that people should be on the lookout for?
Let's see. Well, I don't know when this will be posted, but today I put out a really big one on pseudo-archaeology, so that's a fun one. I'll do I'm going to do one on Dennis Noble. Like I said earlier, I'm going to do a nice lengthy piece. Just really like there needs to be a standalone piece of just like, who is Dennis Noble? What does he say? Why do creationists champion him? Why are they wrong to do that? Right. It has to happen. So there'll be that one. I don't know. I'm going to do another one on Terrence Howard, like just fun stuff.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I finally went after him the other day, his, Patrick Bet David.
That was. I'm gonna do one on that because everybody's been asking for it. So yeah,
it's something else. There, most of it I can't comprehend because I don't know, his mathematical physics stuff. It's just I don't know enough to know why what he's saying is nonsense. So I just kind of have to throw up my hands. But there was a lot of stuff he said that I was like, okay, even a sophomore could probably know why that's dumb.
No, there's a lot of stuff where you can do nothing but throw up your hands because it just is nothing. It's just nothing. Right? It's word salad up to the nth degree. There's no substance to it. So what are you going to do? I try to find clever little, you know, I think that's where I fall back more on the comedy because there's just nothing of substance to really dig into. I can put some science and math in there where applicable, but other times it's just pure mockery. So, you know. It's good fun.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with using humor. On this channel, we do tons of that.
Yeah.
So I think we'll leave it there. Like I said 10 times before, but I'm going to say it again. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.